Well, welcome everybody to this technical committee meeting. In a moment I'll just ask you to stand briefly for a moment's silence, but just on behalf of the technical committee, our hearts and prayers go out to the local and wider Muslim community after the tragic events in Christchurch last week, and also noting that a member of the local Muslim community was tragically killed in a car accident just this week, just north of Palmerston. So if we just stand for a moment and show our respect. Thank you. Thank you very much. Are there any apologies for the technical committee? I think we've got a full quota. Thank you. There's no requests for leave of absence. In attendance, we have the appropriate staff and consultants. Confirmation of the agenda. We just need to note that item 11.4 isn't noted on page 2, but the report is in the body. Oh, it's the last item, in fact, of the circulated agenda, so it's just a minor technicality. Conflict of interest, the same regular reminder about if that is an issue for you, you need to make us aware. Public forum, I understand there's no public forum today, there's no presentation or presentations, and we move on to item 8, confirmation of the minutes. I will move from the chair that you receive and confirm as a true and correct record or accurate record, seconded by Councillor Lawton. Any discussion? If not, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Mm-hmm. Aye.
Against, carried. Actions, I'll just take that as read. No one got any issues there, but we note the actions. On to item 10. Which is one of the first matters for council decision, and it's the Leith Amenity Enhancement. This covers off a considerable amount of work that the Leith Working Group has absorbed themselves in over a period of time. Welcome to Jeff King, our Senior Projects Engineer, and Scott Folds, the Acting Manager Engineering, who I should have introduced first. So welcome. I think, Scott, this may be your first
indeed
time here. Yes. So welcome, a warm welcome to you.
Thank you.
Great to have you on board. So what we've got in front of us is essentially that, as I say, the work from the working group. We're also reminded that a considerable amount of money, $953,000, is included in the current, next year. The bulk of it in next year's budget, and we, I suppose, essentially being asked to receive the report, endorse the concepts described in the feedback from the working group, and obviously staff have prioritised that work as well and come up with a reduced number and a reduced number of projects, and essentially the third part of is that we start implementing the works that we've already budgeted for this year and next year, and the last part is noting the contribution of the Leith Working Group, which has been much appreciated. Scott, is there anything you would like to add or comment on at this point before we go to questions?
You've undertaken a very good introduction, and I'm sure you're familiar. I guess the key thing is I think it presented to this committee the outcomes from the working group in June last year, and we've undertaken to go away and look at the cost of implementing those works and some options around that. And we've had input from independent consultants looking at those costings, and they're familiar with, well, they're both familiar with the work that's been undertaken to date, and so familiar with working in this environment. So we believe they're fairly robust and on the conservative side for undertaking that. clearly it's early stages and we haven't done any detailed design and a number of things to be undertaken. I think, is everyone reasonably familiar with the outcomes, the community outcomes, and what was being sought there in terms of trying to get that natural environment and improving it and more amenity? And then some of the work that was being proposed. If you're reasonably comfortable with that, I'll just move through into next start. Obviously, it is a fairly constricted area. Currently, it's a pretty functional site. It's surrounded by buildings and infrastructure, and currently there is the capacity for the flood flow, but obviously things we do will impact on that, or can impact on it. So there is that, the overall list, so we have costed the work to fully implement the proposals that came out from the working group. And that sits around that $12.5 million, and that's broken into the three reaches in the various. I guess the significant components then are when we start impacting or breaking apart some of that existing wall and bed structure, and that's those start to be significant costs. But in many senses, that upper area in particular was where the working group was keen to see work undertaken, and wished to see some of that work progress along those lines. So those proposals provide an overall, I guess they provide the best enhancements that we could do within this location. Obviously, it's not going to return it to a natural channel, but it is going to significantly improve, and the working group was keen to see that progress. Those are really a list of items that council can work through and choose, and there's various degrees that you can consider. We have come up with a potential list of priority works of the $7.4 million. Now that effectively the key elements there is when we are doing less demolition of the existing channel and structure, but clearly that leaves more of that concrete channel in place, so it limits it. And there is that initial program within the current budget. So I won't go into that any further. The only other thing that I'd perhaps note is that the channel's been around for a long time. A lot of those walls are old there and will need repair, refurbishment in years ahead. Currently, over the next 10 years, there's just under $1 million put in there for that purpose, and another $2.5 million in the following 20 years. So there is a total of $3.5 million for refurbishment of those walls. I suspect that may be on slightly on the low side, but we haven't done any detailed work around that. But I guess integrating that with the refurbishment is obviously going to be a more cost-effective way of undertaking some of these works. And the other element is the need to work very closely with the other agencies in the vicinity, and as their various plans develop, and so that it's a part of an integrated development, not an isolated piece of work. Sorry, one other thing I would comment on, we have had some preliminary discussion with the Polytech, of which that initial work would be outside. They are supportive. They would like to see, obviously, the whole set of works going, and to some extent consider that the initial works still leave them looking at a concrete wall, and so we're less supportive of just doing that small piece of work if that was as far as it was going to go. So, Mr. Chairman, if leave it at that and open to questions.
Thank you, Scott. Can I just confirm, just looking at the priority works total is 7.4. I know it's not all about finance, but it's got an important aspect, obviously, of this report. Approximately $3.5 million over 20 years is essentially essential asset management work. Is that correct?
Okay. Yes.
Questions? Councillor Decker.
Thanks for the paper for a start off, because a lot of work was put into this by obviously the engineering directorate and the comms and engagement staff, and getting together a good harvest of community feel about this project. And I think a lot of us around this table have been looking forward to this day for quite a long time too, because that's a part of the meeting which is, one, ugly, two, unnecessarily over-engineered, if I can be a bit redundant for a moment, and increasingly used because of the stadium and the growth of the two campuses down there. So I think we all probably want, as we found through the community working group, we want to see improvements. We want to see that may part of Dunedin starting to look attractive and aesthetically pleasing. I'm being redundant again. But the big thing is the cost. And I was a bit slapped across the face by these numbers. And I guess, therefore, my question is to Dr. Palmer, probably, or the CE, or somebody who does this very high-level stuff, where's that money come from? If we want to develop an amenity of high quality, as we would want, as we should, how on earth do we find the $6, $7, $8, $12 million? And who pays for the debt? Is it the flood scheme people, using the differential rating system we've had for the Leith Lindsay project? Or do we have a Dunedin City special rating district for that kind of finance? Before we go any further on in terms of what we want to do, I'd like to know the answer to that. How the hell do we find that money?
Dr. Palmer.
Yeah. So through you, Mr. Chairman, those are the sorts of questions that need to be answered as we work up the next long-term plan. So that's why one of the recommendations is to work up what some implementation options and packages would look like, having regard to all of those questions around funding. At the moment, we don't have a project. What we have is a long list. So I just need to stress that we've got a long list of possible works elements which happen to sum to the 12 million, or the higher priority ones, the 7 or 8. So at the moment, it's not a commitment to implementing all of those things, but just the subset of the immediate things which sum to around $900,000. All of those other matters would be worked up over the next 12 months or so, for consideration by council.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you, Councillor Robertson and Councillor Scott, and then Councillor Laws.
Yeah, thank you very much for this report and for all the work that's gone in, consulting with the community and the volunteer hours, obviously, that various stakeholders and community have put in. Really helpful to know what people are wanting out of this area. And it's quite a lot, and rightly so. It's a very important part of Dunedin, Dunedin's heritage and Dunedin's future. I can see this area developing and being amazing into the future. And sometimes when we try to cut costs, actually we're wasting money. Sometimes. That's kind of how I see this. If we're going to do a project, let's do it really well, and something that we would be happy to spend money on, right, and something we can see good benefit from, rather than spending money on just doing something that's priority, or, you know, making it a little bit better. So I think, though, fairly presenting that to the community, engaging what they do want to spend their money on, is the way to go. So presenting a range of options, right from what the working group has put forward through to the priority, through to bare maintenance work, I suppose, and see where we get to. But I personally would rather we were spending our money to do something that's Yeah, that's going to put us in a good stead as a city moving forward, even if we stage it over time.
Thank you. Councillor Scott.
Yeah, just following on from Councillor Robinson, I agree with Councillor Robinson's sentiment. I don't know if the question was ever, though, asking what do you want to spend your money on. It was like, what is your wish list? And the rubber's just met the road, so we're finding out exactly what the wish list actually costs. And so then you should go through a prioritisation process. And I suspect, you know, the engineering technical group would come out and said, well, in your view, there's the list and this should be the highest priority at this point. I think actually what you're proposing here would be is a good start, and it will set some type of benchmark in terms of that whole lower leak to get that access to continue the theme that we've been doing all the way down the leak. So I think that's quite good. And similar to Councillor Robinson, you know, let's look forward to the big picture over time. One of my questions is at what point do we ask ourselves, well, what should we be doing on the Lindsay? You know, are we at a, you know, should we be putting 12 million finishing off the Leith to a high degree, or at what point do we look at the Lindsay? At what point do we look at the Kokra Stream? The Kokra Stream, we just ignore it. You know, it's covered up with roads, it's at the back door of industry, there's, as I understand it, there's maintenance issues from time to time, but, you know, this wonderful opportunity. You know, at what point do we start that endeavour? So I think, you know, what's proposed here is good. As for Councillor Robinson, we need to consider what do we need to do due justice to this project, but there are other obligations and opportunities in the greater region, the hinterland as well. But yes. So I'll ask that question specifically. At what point do we look at the Lindsay, and what point do we look at the Kokra Stream and other opportunities around the region, bearing in mind that $12 million is quite significant?
It's a question for Dr. Palmer.
Great.
Dr. Palmer.
So Kaikarai Stream, Lindsay Creek and the Water of Leith were part of a three streamscapes project of council in the late 90s.
Yeah.
Some work was done on the Kaikarai. We're presently doing some urgent, essential flood damage repairs on the Kaikarai, but nothing more. At the moment, council doesn't have any plans for similar sorts of work on Lindsay Creek nor Kaikarai, but could choose to initiate such things through an annual plan decision-making if it wished. Where Lindsay Creek sits at the moment is that council resolved to do nothing further on it in respect of flood protection or related amenity. So there is no work being undertaken on Lindsay Creek.
But nevertheless, $12 million is, you'll agree, is quite a significant sum and could go some way on both those streams.
I think Dr. Palmer's acknowledged that.
Yeah.
Council Laws.
I think it's the essential duty of the Otago Regional Council to always, when the opportunity presents, to enhance the quality of life of the people who live within its regional boundaries. And I can only endorse the recommendations today and make a plea for this council to be bold, to be innovative, to be visionary. And I have to say I don't see a problem here. It's a little bit time for the Otago Regional Council to start looking at its finances and go, oh my God, you're actually flush. You've got no debt. $50 million of reserves. And the only other priority that is being considered at the moment is wasting $30 million on a headquarters building. Are you joking? Of course you've got the money there. You've got 80% equity in the Port of Otago, which is worth something in the vicinity of about $500 million.
I sense that...
Let me finish.
I sense that the discussion you're promoting is an annual plan discussion.
No.
But I would prefer that you focus on You've indicated that you support the recommendations, but focus on the paper in hand rather than...
Okay, I'm going to disagree with you, Andrew.
Well, that's fine. That's your prerogative.
The reason why I'm going to is because the cost has been raised by two of the three previous speakers. And so it is an issue. And I am responding to those concerns.
I'll just highlight my concern. If each of us go around the table and focus on where you've widely scoped the debate, we will be here all day and probably half the night. That's what I'm concerned about. So all I'm saying is that in light of the recommendations, in light of the report in front of us, in light of the tenor of the introduction from Scott, I just want us to focus on what's in hand.
You may well want to focus on that, Andrew. I don't. And the reality is that I am responding to responses on whether or not you can afford it. I therefore move, I'm happy to move this motion.
Excellent.
And I think it is an opportunity for the Otago Region of Councils also to do something else, and that's connect with the community of Dunedin. We spend a lot of time around this table on issues actually in my neck of the woods, in the Dunstan and the Clutha and the rural areas. And apart from buses, I can't really think that I spent an awful lot of time on Dunedin and a bit of looking at raised water tables in St Kilda, which we haven't done an awful lot of South Dunedin at the moment. So I move this, think it's a fantastic idea, let's go. And let's consult the Dunedin community broadly about their aims and objectives as well.
Councillor Laws, seconded by Councillor Brown. We'll just park that for a moment. We've got Councillor Woodhead, any other speakers, Councillor Hope and Councillor Brown. Councillor Woodhead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we're completing this August the upgrade to the Leith flood scheme. So that was the critical early stages over the last 7 or 8 years of this scheme. This next stage is about enhancement. So and there's lots of opportunities there. And yes, the costs look a bit eye-watering. But let's have a conversation with the community about how we can stage that and packaging enhancement as part of maintenance, which Mr. Folds and Dr. Palmer have referred to. It might be something that we can spread over a decade and develop as part of the next LTP and start to shape up. And part of that conversation will be the funding policy, because we've got some... quite defined beneficiaries paying for the flood enhancement that we've been through recently, but there is, in my view, a much wider group of beneficiaries to this next stage of work. And I support the recommendations. Let's do the first bit, spend the 900-odd thousand, and then during the LTP, let's work up. And there will obviously be a new council, what the enhancements might look like, how we can stagger them, taking advantage of maintenance that's due anyway and do it efficiently. And over time, because yes, it's a fantastic part of the city, it's getting busier and busier, stadium, polytech, university, etc. And, over the next decade or so, we might be able to take opportunities and really turn it into something special long term.
Thank you. Councillor Hope.
Thank you. I just have a quick question for the engineers and maybe Dr. Palmer. You talk about the walls. The walls are old and repairs and refurbishments are required. $3.5 million. Are we talking just, and I have read the paper and I have looked at the pictures, but are you talking about the walls between, say, the riverbank, where people, where they walk, where they just sit and have their picnics, that sort of thing? I'm trying to understand where they are and how urgent those are. I know you're talking about over the next 20 years, but are some of more concern than others?
There are certainly issues now with some of those walls. I mean, I think some of the, and it's the channel walls that, and in places the bed of the stream. So effectively it's 100-odd years old, some components of it, and those are starting to be shelved.
Yes.
And there are issues there that need to be dealt with.
So they're getting to be urgent, aren't they?
I think it's becoming more urgent, yes.
And obviously more flooding and things like that. And
it's not from a flooding point of view. This is really about the ongoing robustness of those systems.
Councillor Brown.
Look, I'm very supportive of this paper. I think it's great. We need to get on with this, but I think we need to realise that it's going to be done over maybe two or three decades. So while the cost does look a wee bit eye-watering, it's going to be spread over some time. Just referring back to Lindsay's Creek, we did have a plan for Lindsay's Creek, but when we had a funding policy put around it, it was unaffordable, and we made a decision many years ago that it was unaffordable. We didn't progress any more with Lindsay's Creek.
That's right.
The work that's going to happen in the next 2 years on the Leith, is the money in reserves for that now? Is it as part of the flood work, or is it still to be? We've still got to work out a funding policy for that.
Through Mr. Hemming, no. The works that are proposed for actioning now are within the budget provision already in approved annual plans.
Right.
But obviously we won't know the true cost until we go to tender, so there's always going to be a cost risk, but also a hold point. So we'll come back to Council, if Council makes a resolution today to proceed with those, we would work through design, construction, tendering, further decision by Council to actually do. So there's some hold points. At the moment there is adequate budget.
So the funding policy has been worked out for that?
Correct. When the scheme was initiated, there was a number of flood stages, and then the environmental enhancement piece at the back end of it,
right.
And we've reached that point.
Yep. Councillor Kempton.
Yeah, just a couple of quick things that a lot of what's been said I absolutely agree with. I think the first thing is that we actually have a proposition here, and I know that it is a long-term proposition, but it actually has been extraordinarily thoroughly consulted on. And so the one thing I would like to think is that we consider this to be quite a mature proposal, much more mature than often the first time it comes in. Well, I know we've had it here before, but when the first detailed report comes in, this is much more mature than what we normally see. And so I think we need to be measured about future consultation, and I think that we have to make sure that we take advantage of its maturity. And the other thing, too, is that, the City Council have got similar aspirations for the Harbourside area to this. The two are parallel, in my view.
Yep.
The City Council won't have the big white buildings up tomorrow. We know that. And I don't see that $12 million over a decade or whatever means that Lindsay Creek or Kai Kai or anywhere else is an either or. So I support it strongly.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Lawton.
Just a question. It's a great proposal and a huge amount of work, and it's the feedback from the community is sort of half and half around aesthetics versus actual water quality. A lot of the initial work that we're putting into this is about aesthetics. It's about, and some of it's safety in terms of the integrity of the infrastructure. But given that the council's priority is water quality, water, and I'd say water quality is way up there, how much of what we're actually spending is going to improve water quality over aesthetics? And do we have our priorities right in terms of partnerships with the City Council and the work that they're going to be required to do for urban water quality? Have we had a good look at that?
I guess, yes, good question. A lot of it is around the aesthetics access. I guess we are stuck with a relatively narrow corridor and a concrete channel, and to some extent we still need some of that to get the flood capacity or to maintain the flood capacity. I guess we're looking particularly, and the key area I think is that 4th Street to Anzac, where we've got the concrete channel bed. Below that we've actually got largely I won't say natural, but it's a stone, an estuarine piece. And so we're really talking about that fourth to ANZAC as to what can we do to improve there. So the full proposal does have removal of components of that channel so that we can actually get back into more of a gravel bed in places. There are some challenges with that, with the speed of the flows coming out of the upstream section, and so we'd have to be mindful of that. But yeah, the full proposal certainly goes further down that track, but we're never going to have a natural stream in its entirety.
Has it got aspects of the design where potentially in the future you could see retrofit or changes that would help to further increase or improve in quality, water quality? I'm just trying to think of, again, coming back to the staging and the long term, are we designing it so it fits surface for future improvements?
I think in terms of that fish access and corridor, I think, as I say, it's particularly the bed of the channel that you're needing to focus on for that. And I guess the way that things are battered back on the sides, but that's restricted by what's the infrastructure and buildings and elements around it. I guess it, we're going about as far as we can for the moment within that that footprint, and as I say, unless the community wanted to move back further, there is a limit as to just how far you can go. But I think provided you can get that integrity right through the system where you've got the channel and, I guess, fish passage running through, then that's probably about the limit as to where you can go within the current structures.
There is one possibility which hasn't actually been raised in material put forward to you, and that is constructing small weirs, which would form a number of small settlement ponds through the reach, put the water back in, and that would facilitate trapping some of the fine sediment that was there with the material washed off the urban roads, which is quite contaminated. We haven't addressed a program to clean that out, but there is possibly some synergy with the urban stormwater approach there.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff. And Scott, does that complete? Dr. Palmer.
I would just add that as we work up the implementation plan, I think it's important to build flexibility and adaptive capability into the future for measures that would affect water quality as well as climate change. So I think that's an implicit part of the program. We would work up the ability to adapt it without having to undo previous work.
Particularly in partnership with the DCC, who are going to be required to undertake ongoing work in that area. Yeah. Thank you.
Councillor Robertson.
I think as well, I just want to reflect on the Love the Leith and the great work that we have done through the Leith, and actually what that is doing for Dunedin's value of its waterways as well, from industrial channels to something we've invested in, we really care about, and actually looks great. You can access it, it's got rocks, it looks like a stream, and as we progress through to a water plan change and looking at policies, I suppose, for urban water, it really helps to have people caring about their waterways and it looking like something you want to invest in. So yeah, I think this type of work as well, even though maybe it's amenity, it's not going to address water quality, it's a good step to getting people to wanting to invest in water quality, because it's not going to be cheap either. Yeah.
Thank you, councillors. The recommendations have been moved by Councillor Laws, seconded by Councillor Brown. The only comment I'll make is that from on behalf of the committee, just to pass on our grateful thanks for the efforts of the working group. As someone mentioned, I think Councillor Robertson and Councillor Scott, they're all volunteers. They've found time to feed back into this process, and so we highly value that that effort that they've made. So thank you. I'll put the motion that's 1, 2 and 3 listed on page 6. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Mm-hmm. Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Moving on to the stock truck effluent disposal Central Otago site, or better known as STED. Now, you're probably aware that Tim Cadogan had sent an email. I welcome... Who am I welcoming?
Chris Fox.
Chris Fox from Opus. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you.
You may be aware that the Mayor of Central Otago District Council had sent email to a number of two or three of us, or possibly more, I'm not 100% sure, but I just want to briefly summarise the content of his email, and this refers to the Rippondale site mainly. So essentially, his comments, the Mayor's comments, he believes that the OPIS report failed to recognise the economic value of the site in its current form. He refers to the location as being important from a tourist perspective, photo opportunities in the autumn he did mention about. The proposed Rippondale site is in close proximity to the Highlands Motorsport Park, which is a highly valued tourist attraction in central Otago. The OPIS report doesn't fully recognise the scale, proximity or relevance of the proposed 900 lot subdivision, which essentially is across the road from the proposed site, or this proposed Rippondale site, and that proposed subdivision potentially has the potential to increase Cromwell's population by 2,000 residents, and clearly it's a private plan change that is going through a process. It's a real proposal, and it's going to be heard by commissioners in June, so it's obviously gathering momentum. And the last comment I'd make is that full council have endorsed his email, and it also has the support of the Cromwell Community Board. So with that in mind, I would like to move from the chair that recommendations 1, 2 and 3, and the third one that asks for an option is that State Highway 8 Terrace Lindis Peaks Strait be the option that this council pursues. I do understand that we are going to we require to go back to NZTA. The funding isn't currently available, but that would be the situation whatever site we chose. And the other comment I make is that considering the Rippondale site and considering the what's being proposed in a planning sense across the road, I would suggest that the two activities aren't complementary, and the possibility of reverse sensitivity is real. And I also look at existing sites in and around the region. The vast majority that I've viewed are well away from residential activity. So have I a seconder, and then we'll go to questions?
Yes, I'll second.
Mr. Chairman, I'm very happy to second that, and
thank
congratulate you,
you
on your leadership from the chair this morning. That's the second time you have done a terrific job in helping us through otherwise perhaps embarrassing situations. My reason for seconding this is that we as a council must value very highly our relationships with our TLAs. I think we generally do, but at times we have been a bit patronising in terms of the work we do with particularly the rural district councils. And I'm very glad that you have acknowledged the email from the Mayor, which I haven't seen, but I saw it through the media. And I value his input into our discussions, and I value your leadership of them. My question is, as seconder of this motion, that the terrace site, I was going to push that as well, but I would like someone with more expertise and more local knowledge to tell me what the density of stock truck movement through that terrace highway is. Are we going to capture the people we want by erecting a stead on that stretch of road? Presumably there is quite a lot of stock movement down out of the Mackenzie, wherever, up the higher valley there. But how does it compare with the amount of stock traffic coming through Rippondale?
Thank you, Councillor Deakin. Second the motion. Chris, did you want to touch on the analysis that you did and the efficiency of the terrace site as compared with others?
Yeah, certainly. The terrace site does collect a lot of traffic that comes through from North Otago and South Canterbury through Central Otago.
Might just, Chris, if you could just pull that microphone towards you a little bit. Lovely.
Sorry. The terrace site does take quite a large amount of stock trucks that travel from Central Otago through to North Canterbury and South North Otago, and also down through to Southland. The assessment that was done by our team in Central Otago that look after the highway network through there is that it possibly would capture or improve stock effluent spillage by about 50% across the total network in Central Otago at that site.
When you say quite a lot, can you actually quantify it statistically?
I don't have those figures available, sorry.
Thank you. Councillor Laws, then Councillor Kempton, then Councillor Scott.
Well, actually I do. It's in the report. ironically, the answer, if you go to page 103 of 414 of the appendix, you will see that each of the options finishes with the reduction of effluent from that particular thing. And as the chairman's noted, the reduction for the terrace site is between 40 and 45% in effluent spillage across Central Otago. For the Rippenville Strait, it's 35 to 40, been assessed as. For Gibson Valley, 30 to 35%. And for option 5, which is the Gorge Creek Road, 15 to 20%. So, there are the figures.
Thank you, I didn't see those.
That's right. I have to say, I was amazed that Rippenville was even here, given our previous discussions over, the last 18 months? And the well-expressed views of the community and the regional council and motions that we've passed and discussions we've had around the table. Anything that would contemplate putting Rippenville there as an option would be an insurrection, I would suggest, or almost an invitation to insurrection by the entire Cromwell community, and actually also be an act of vandalism by the Otago Regional Council. But I'm delighted to see that that's not going to happen today. And happy to support this motion. It's Rippenvale too, not Rippendale.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Apologies.
That's all right. But one of the things I just want to ask Dr. Palmer is, do we actually need one? It seems the obvious and salient question at all. We've got one now on Brass Knocker Road, which I understand is a magnificent feat of engineering. It's just not operational. Due to deficiencies of our own, but do we actually need one? So I'm interested in now Brass Knocker Road exists, Gavin, whether or not the same imperative exists and problems have been diagnosed and said, yep, it's a problem.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is part of completing the network, so they have to be considered in their entirety, and Mr. Fox might like to comment on how in this case, option 2, Terrace, would fulfil network completion.
So a site at Terrace would encompass the Central Otago area with stock truck movements coming from the major directions that the traffic currently comes from. We have coverage currently in Southland at Five Rivers, down south of Roxburgh at the McNab site. Brass Knocker now covers off the Maniototo direction through to Palmerston, and the site at Terrace would cover the section of roading that links to North Otago and South Canterbury as a network-wide looking at Otago and Southland. And State Highway 1 is covered by several sites up and down the length of State Highway 1 currently.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I think we need to be a bit careful here around simply deciding, well, actually, we can redesign this network at the table, because going back 5 years, this network was designed, and actually, in that original design, anything up State Highway 8, isn't it, Terrace Way, was in fact in addition to something on State Highway 6. It was part of the network. And certainly in the last, oh, I think probably within the last 2 years, our transport planner at the time was in discussion with Environment Canterbury about whether the terrace site would be in Environment Canterbury's territory or in fact in ORC's territory around Terrace. So that has always been part of the plan, and something that protects essentially the Kawera Gorge was always planned and has been planned on the Rippenvale Strait. And so we need to be careful about saying, oh, well, we've had a long-standing plan, but let's just change it now. Right? And so what I'm suggesting is that building something in around Terrace or in the... Well, I'm not suggesting it, I'm saying that building something around Terrace or further north towards the Lindis, in fact, was a lower priority and would have been the last and may well have been done by Environment Canterbury to something on State Highway 6 that protected the Kawera Gorge, certainly from southbound stock truck traffic. And keep in mind, too, that that network was put in place with very close consultation with the Road Transport the Road Transport Association and their members as well, who probably know a bit more than us about what goes where. Now, my personal view happens to be that there we have to take a balanced view of this, and we have to say, right, we have the iconic poplars on the one hand, we have a subdivision that's almost certainly not going to be in line of sight because they'll have noise reduction barriers against the highway, and other thing, and we've got a motorsport park several hundred metres down the road. Now, we have to balance that and against the fact that we have a road safety issue in the Kawera Gorge in particular, as stock trucks start to go up and down and swing from side to side with full tanks, right? And on top of that, we have also a tourism experience, which ain't flash when you have this green stuff all over your windshield and you wonder what the hell's going on, all right? And the other thing to remember is that the Kawera Gorge will have a lot of very rapid drainage, and it does have a lot of lined rapid drainage of water table straight into the Kawera River, and that's where our untreated effluent will go. So we have four things to be balanced up if we're going to make a rational, evidence-based decision. And my view is that CODC have not done that, and I think it behoves us to do that. Whatever the outcome is, we have to be able to walk away from here saying we've balanced up all those important issues. If the Rippenvale site doesn't go ahead, then my personal view is that the next best thing is the one at Victoria Flats, right? Because that is the closest to Rippenvale in terms of position and purpose. That's all.
Thank you. Councillor Scott.
No, thank you. From my perspective, the Rippenvale one is a no-goer for all the reasons that you and Mr. Chair and others have said. I mean, it's just, I also, like you made the comment that you'd had a look at or kept your eyes open. It's the same with myself. All these effluent disposal sites around Otago are like tucked in corners in the back beyond, not on a straight where there's going to be significant future development and so forth. So to me, it's a no-goer. Councillor Kempton said that the next best option was Gibson Flat. I'm not sure about that. I accept what's being said. But I've read the report. What the report actually says is that there are a number of options. I mean, for goodness sake, we've been talking about this for years. You know, like, if there's all this information risk into the car rail, where is this information on this report? Where's the table that says this? It's not what it says. It says there's option one, do nothing. Option two, Terrace. Option three, Rippenvale. Option four, Victoria Flat. And then I look at it, like Councillor Laws looked at it, like the Terrace one has a 40 to 45% reduction in effluent spillage. In my understanding, that's what it's all about. That's a higher percentage than the Ripon Vale one. I'm also surprised that the Ripon Vale one's even still here. You know, like, so I ask, is it Mr. Fox? For goodness sake, what's your recommendation? Because the Terrace one has the highest percentage. Surely, I hear Councillor Kempton's point, but surely, just on a technical basis, let alone the social basis, and then that the CODC's been promoting, it's the most effective site. Is that correct or not? The Terrace site, is that the most effective site? Because it's all about effluent spillage across central Otago, yeah?
I'm not sure whether that's a fair question. I think there's got to be a political decision.
No, I'm asking from a technical perspective.
And
because the data's here, we're looking at all the...
Yep. As you've referred to, Councillor Scott, the efficiency of each site has been analysed, and we've got a percentage of reduction.
So what's the answer? Which is the best technical effluent reduction site?
Well, the
been analysed. The bill's in the mail.
The terrace site is, because it quotes the 40-45% reduction in stock effluent as compared with the other sites, which I think the next nearest site is the Ripon Vale.
Terrace site is the best site.
Correct. That's what it says in the report. Yep.
That's all I need to say.
Okay. Thank you, Councillor Lawton.
So we're in a shortfall again, as cost keeps increasing for this particular piece of infrastructure. Dr. Palmer, will the additional funding come from? Is that a targeted rate to for rural properties, or is it just out of a general roading rate that we have?
Through you, Mr. Chairman, there's no shortfall in the ORC component of the funding. In fact, there's a slightly small surplus. The issue is a shortfall in the NZTA component of the funding, and that is why, if Council decides to pursue any of options 2 to 5, there would need to be a further application to NZTA for its share.
The reason I ask is I'm still on the question of, do we really need this? The map on the attachment shows a number of existing facilities. Mr. Fox, are they all existing facilities, including privately owned ones, or are they only those owned by council and NZTA?
The map that you refer to only shows the facilities that are owned by or funded through the NZTA and the various councils. Private sites are not included.
Okay. I know Councillor Bell brought it up a number of times before. Do you know of other SEDs that are actually available already in this area of the Cromwell Terrace space?
I'm not aware of any that are currently operational in that area.
It's only Brassnock and Rays Junction. Rays Junction. Mm-hmm. Maybe.
That's correct, yeah.
So there's no private ones. I'm just trying to figure out whether or not putting in more infrastructure where, as I understand it, there are actually steds owned by private trucking companies in that area that could potentially also be used. And have we ever looked at that?
Can anyone answer that question?
Maybe I can a little bit.
Councillor Bell.
I was really going to touch on that, Mr. Chairman. You've probably heard me before. And one of the questions I have asked at this table, when we were talking about Ripon Vale the Nevis there, the flats there, as options, and Terrace in the past, why we haven't looked at going to Comtrans. Comtrans has got a transport yard 5 minutes off the road. The truck drivers go in there and fill their trucks up, no matter which company you belong to or got access to it. Why can't they go in there and also dispose of the effluent if there was an effluent site provided? And there isn't, as far as I know, apart from washing down their trucks, they'll have some sort of an operation like that. But I just want to take you back. What Councillor Kempton has said is what has been debated around the table of Regional Land Transport Committee meetings, but I do know, privately talking to a lot of myself and counterparts, there is the answer to Councillor Lawton, there is a lot more
trucking companies down in Southland now putting in their own effluent stations, so to speak, and other trucking companies are using them. And there's the doubt whether they will be providing any more. Now, that could be the influence of a number of those companies being owned by the Richardson Group. And I'll take you back to when Councillor Kempton and I had a meeting with ECAN on suggesting to ECAN that they may like to consider putting an effluent site at Stead at Amerima. And I don't know whether it's Rex or Lex Williams, who was the commissioner at the time, who also happens to be the chairman of the Richardson Group, which is a large private trucking company who now owns significant number of transport or partners and significant number of transport operators in Central Otago now. He was the opinion, and Councillor Kempton, you correct me if I'm wrong, he was the opinion, why are we in this game? This is not a ratepayer's job. This is a job for the industry. And why aren't more trucking companies going to be doing that? Now, that was unanimously talked about in our South Island situation, and back then he and the Southland chair of the time, Councillor Timms, I understand, had a discussion with the Transport Minister, who was the National Transport Minister of the day. I think it might have been Williamson, I can't quite recall. What came out of that, I do not know. But I have raised this before, Councillor Lawton, at a meeting that we had in Ranfurly, a transport meeting. And Jim Harland, who was there on behalf of NZTA, suggested that we go back to the councils, that I go back, or we go back to our respective councils, because it was TAs there, and get the chairs and the mayors to put it through the forums and get it up to lobbied at conferences where you can pass remits. Because the guts of the matter is, as Councillor Kempton is saying, trucks that are full of effluent that are spreading it should be fine. They should be pulled up like anybody else that are doing things that are a menace to the roads or menace to other drivers. And there's no rules in the rule books for that to happen. So we need to be driving that, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Chairman over here, Councillor Wood here. And we need to be getting this through. We sent a letter at one time, various things to this committee from our joint committee, and it's never actually been reacted on in the past. But this is one issue that I do believe that we have got to strengthen ourselves and start pushing it forward through the respective systems and as Jim Harland suggested. And so I believe if you really want a site that's practical, you go to Crom Trans and you do a deal there. It's not your department because OPIS isn't the people that work there. We need to be driving that through the system with NZTA and getting that underway. And as I was saying, Richardson Group in Central Otago have just picked up another two. They're looking at another one, a major transport operator. They are predominantly it, and if that's their theme of responsibility, why aren't we using it and driving it? So we need to be changing things to make sure that the dear little lady in Ranfurly and Roxburgh are not paying for the effluent removal too, of effluent out of the Race Junction one, which they currently are, and we've got to get back to where we can get a plastic cart. I'll show you what they look like. You can get them. Here we are. Here we'll use Winnie the Poohs. All you need is a plastic card. The truck drives in, slaps it over. He pays for his costs, divides it up amongst his clients that he's carting for, and that's the end of it. It is their responsibility. It is not our responsibility. It's not the ratepayers' responsibility, nor the taxpayers to that degree. We need to be driving this back into the roading industry. Naturally, the roading industry of Otago are going to say, yes, well, we'll tick the box and say, go and put a stead in our particular areas because they don't have to pay for it. And the other reason I want to emphasise is that the facts and figures of the percentages are predominantly when only the cartage is being done for dairying when the dairy grazing is going on. It's a very short burst. Sheep farmers and other farmers that are taking their stock to the works have to empty all their stock out. Yes, you are supposed to empty your dairying stock out, but I've said it here before, and I don't know whether you understand, it's like pack and save. You weigh your stock onto the truck that's heading away to go contract grazing, and when it's coming back from contract grazing, it's weighed up onto there. So what do? You fill them up. And yes, they will start spraying their shit and crap over the roads. And Mr. Chairman, that third option we need to be looking at here in your recommendation. I don't know when I meant to pass amendment, move amendment to it, but we need to be looking at other options, not just looking at tariffs. And so I believe that this council's got to take a lead and start doing something that gets it back into the private sector. Thank you.
The ORC's policy on these matters, the here and now. That would be my first point. The second point would be with the proposed additional site only containing about 50%, there's plenty of scope for additional steads to be established on private transport companies' sites, so to speak. So I understand what you're saying, but I think we need to deal with the here and now and the current regime policy-wise we're working within. That would be my own comment. Councillor Woodhead, and then Councillor Robertson, then Councillor Neal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll deal with a couple of topics that Councillor Bell raised first. So I did follow it up with Local Government New Zealand, Dr. Mike Reid, several years ago now, and we looked into the background for the current legislation and the current agreement and funding policies. There's been a very strong, the Road Transport Association on behalf of the commercial trucking sector and local government had been involved in the early 1990s, I think, and the current regime fell out of that process. And so it's a permitted activity to spill effluent. It's specifically excluded from a load that... the legislation that restricts what you can lose off a truck and illegally. So you're allowed to spill effluent from a truck. The trucking industry have done their bit by putting in tanks, and the legislation is the legislation of the day, and a combination of the Crown and local government are working through where we decide to, because they're around the country, the networks that we now see. And Otago was actually one of the leaders in that field. We've had the initial network in place for quite some time. And this discussion, which has been going on for a number of years in circles, is about completing the network. The other thing we need to remember is, and Councillor Bell's just touched on it, that there's two issues or two main drivers here. The one that really drove it was the movement of dairy stock to grazing adult cattle in the autumn and back again in the winter. All right? There are millions of stock move around our regions all year, and at this time of the year, to our processing plants. The generalisation, there's not too many effluent issues. There is the occasional one, and the current network does get used all year, actually. But the real pressure point is the dairy grazing in the autumn and then coming back to the dairy farms. So when we're looking at the network in Central Otago and the gaps we've got currently, there is quite a lot of stock moves backwards and forwards from Southland to the Wanaka, Cromwell, Central Otago area. Dropped off a little in the last few years. I've done a bit of research. Dropped off a bit in the last few years for a combination of reasons, but biosecurity is becoming, on-farm biosecurity is becoming a big issue for dairy farmers, and there's much more at-home winter grazing done than there was at one point. There is some dairy cow movement between the Mackenzie country and Wanaka-Hawea, but there's an awful lot of stock moves through, as our consultants suggested earlier, across the Lindis heading north. There's a generalisation stock drifts east to processing plants and north. And if you spend any time in Amerima, which I do on an annual basis, there is probably be over a dozen trucks a day during the summer heading out of northern Southland and central Otago, upper Clutha, to processing plants in north Otago and Canterbury. So there's two drivers of stock flows. I just want to remind us of that. I support Councillor Kempton's views, but have altered my views a little bit in that there's been ongoing and there will continue to be development in the Upper Clutha. And if you have a look at the stock grazing there, there's more and more dairy beef and more cattle. I think there is at some stage a need for a stock effluent disposal site prior to stocks moving to trucks moving over the Lindis or capturing them coming the other way. But we need to be honest with ourselves that we'll always, until we plug the gap around Rippenvale somewhere, there will be a gap in our network, because there is a significant amount of stock that comes out of Southland and into the Upper Clutha and back again. And frankly, Victoria Flats might work, but it's actually the middle of the Wiggly Road. There's already a lot of effluent spilled on both directions. So you need, you know, Five Rivers and Rippenvale somewhere, whether it's in the truck yard or somewhere. But, all right, if we make a decision today, we'd go with Lindis, which I probably support now. I didn't used to. We're going to leave a gap in the network there. Some of the drivers being used from the likes of Mayor Tim and his council, you know, economic drivers, what a load of emotional codswallop. Nobody goes to Central Otago to see the poplars. When they're going past, they stop and take a photo.
Thank you, Lord.
Absolutely.
Saying you don't come to Dunedin for the
but they're going there for a whole bunch of other reasons, all right? And for a month, while the poplar leaves are looking a wee bit, you know, nice, and it does, yep. And eventually those freaking poplars are going to get either bold or fall over, because that's what Lombardy poplars do. They have a limited life. So we just need to be realistic around some of these things. And also remind ourselves, as I said to Councillor Scott earlier this morning, I've driven past one of our steeds this morning at Milton. It's a flat grate. Let's get real here. And but anyway,
there's something with cow shit in it.
I support the recommendation as they've been moved and seconded, but we need to be realistic. It will leave a gap in the network, and there needs to be plugged around this area somewhere before the road splits to the Upper Clutha or across Cromwell and up the Lindis. All right, there's quite a tight area that needs a stead. I'll leave it at that.
I think your point's well made, following up on Councillor Bell, and I think it's a conversation that we need to drive with the industry.
Yep.
That's
a very long term, and it'll be a heck of a battle. And I think I'll pick up your point from earlier. We need to focus on today.
Okay.
You put the motion?
We've just got Councillor Robertson and Councillor Neil. Councillor Bell, I just
reply to that, but what I wanted to say...
Why are you doing it?
No, not for that part of the report, but not part of the report, but not that part of the report. The brass knocker, which I never touched on, why I want to know is why at 600-odd thousand, and I've got it here somewhere, we had a tender on the first... $693,568.89 was tendered on the 1st of May 2018, and it cost us $840,000, and we're still commissioning it. And is there more costs in that commissioning work? I don't know. I just would like to know exactly where we are with that payment. That nothing has been explained to us why those overruns have been where they are and how they are, and that is a concern of the local public in that particular area at the moment.
We're slightly off topic, but Chris, can you help elaborate on the question that Councillor Bell has raised?
I certainly can. The costings that are in there, you have the contract value that was awarded to Fulton Hogan, so that's the physical works cost of developing the Brass Knocker site. On top of that, you have other costs that have been incurred by Council to through the design and the management of that process. As well as internal council costings that have been included in the total value of 840. So that's why there's a discrepancy between the two numbers that you're referring to.
Okay. Thank you, Chris. Councillor Robertson, then Councillor Neil.
Yeah, I can see that we are going to make a decision today to locate in the terrace area, and I think sharing the sentiments of Councillor Woodhead, that's a reality for today, but listening objectively to Councillor Kempton, particularly in his expertise in land transport, the priority isn't that site. The priority is the Tauaro Gorge from his perspective. Other perspectives out there, yes, we're reducing more effluent spillage if we go to Terrace, and that's something to consider, definitely. But volume versus impacts of where it is are different things. So what are the actual effects of where it's spilled are the things we should be thinking about. And then, I guess, wearing a commissioner hat too, yeah, we hear, okay, we don't like the Rip and Vale disposal site, but you think, well, what are the effects that people are not liking? Are they noise? Are they smell? Are they visual? Can they be mitigated? Can they be even be enhanced from where we're at the moment? All of those are possibly yes. Yeah, people don't like it, but can you imagine actually a site where we think, can we do this really sensitively? Can we contour so that it can't be seen? Can we mitigate the noise? Some people are saying no. We haven't heard that that's not true. I think it could be true. And could we actually enhance the experience of visiting the poplars? We could. We could put a verge where people can stop and it's safer and can view those poplars, and actually it could be better in that area. That's all I'm saying, is if somebody came along with a proposal and could mitigate these, we haven't heard you couldn't. And what are the effects? We haven't heard what they are either, actually.
No.
So those are problems, and we're still going to have to deal with the problems of effluent going through the Kawarra Gorge. And now is a good time to deal with that, in my opinion, rather than delaying it. But I can hear that community are saying differently, and you sometimes have to respect that as well. But when we hear that there's effluent on the roads and it's a problem and Councillor Kempton's dealing with it, then yeah, I do feel sad about that.
Thank you. Councillor Neil.
Yes, thank you, Mr Chairman. And Councillor Robertson actually gave a very good summary then. And what worries me is that she said, right, so we're going to make a decision, and the likely decision is Terrace, and we're possibly making the reasons aren't good enough to put it in Terrace. A lot of things don't stack up. One of the things I'd actually like to, in fact, I won't be voting that we go to Terrace, because we're just almost doing that because we feel we've got to make a decision to build, and we don't have to, particularly following on from what Councillor Bell had to say.
You're doing.
The other point was about these percentages, and I'm no mathematician, but I want to, I'm assuming that, say, 45% is 45% over 12 months. So during the time, the 10 months of the year when no dairy movements were really happening, you're probably picking up 90%. Does that mean that during the dairy trucking time, 70 or 80% of its going isn't being picked up at all at the stations?
Any of the stations, really.
But anyway, that's just a question, and I've actually indicated how I feel on it.
Chris? Yeah. Chris, would you like to respond to Councillor Neil's question?
The only way to completely eliminate all effluent spillage on the highway is to have a vast network. So has been discussed around the table this morning, if we would have a site at Terrace as well as around the Rip and Vale area, you would certainly enhance the collection. No matter where we put a single site, there will still be effluent spillage at other parts of the network. The reduction that has been put in the report is an assessment. It is subjective, and it's what we believe will enhance that particular area of the network. So by having a site at Terrace, you will improve the Lindis, you'll improve the Hawea area, and coming down through onto Cromwell. At which stage the risk still exists that we haven't captured all directions of traffic, and that the trucks themselves start to fill up again and may require another empty before the next site's available for them.
Well, with respect, Mr. Chairman, it didn't at all answer my question.
Put your question again about the volume, that your 40% over 12 months, that's your question, Councillor Neil?
Yes, the question, I guess, is are you picking up 45% during that real bulk period, or is the 45% over the 12 months, which means you're picking up nothing like 45% during that heavy use period?
The assessment will be during the heavy use period. So during that heavy use period, we'll be aiming for that.
Okay.
Thank you. We've had a good discussion, but the last speaker is going to be Councillor Hope.
Thank you. I have listened, and I do want to ask one thing. As you start to hear and now, there's the complimentary, like you say, the Rip and Vale, the 900 houses, okay, and then we've got Councillor Bell saying, well, look, cannot we look else privately? If we were to park this on the table today, just saying, would we lose the money for this debt? What happens? Please.
I think that's a question for Chris.
Yep.
I haven't specifically asked the agency that question, but the money that is set aside at the moment has been allocated within the current funding block. So I could assume that if we were to delay beyond the current funding block, we'd have to go back to NZTA to request additional funding almost back from the beginning. So it'll just be another step in the process to get more funding.
Dr. Palmer, just add to that.
I'll just add that we have to make a fund. If Council chooses option one of the options, 2 to 5, an application and approval is needed from NZTA regardless. There's still a funding shortfall regardless of the amount that we've already been allocated.
Okay, we've had a good go at this, and my only comment before I put the motion would be that the consultant's report from Opus indicates that the most efficient top priority site, in my view, after reading the report, is the terrace site. And for bangs for bucks, that is the best one at this point in time. And I also accept Councillor Bell's and Chairman Woodhead's comments around we do need to work with the industry to take an opportunity that seems to exist currently where transport companies are considering or implementing their own steads on their own transport depots. So if that can be pursued, and whether that's through Councillor Kempton as well from the Regional Land Transport Committee and the Chairman and Councillor Bell, whatever influence we can have, that would be great. I'll put the motion. That is the three recommendations on page 21. All those in favour?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. So number three says what?
Oh, sorry. I read it out at the start. Sorry, I should have reread it. Approves the State Highway 8 Terrace Lindis Peaks Strait as the new stead in...
Okay. That would be number four. Oh, that's number three.
Okay. If we just refer to option two on table one. Everyone clear?
Mm-hmm.
I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
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 Against?
No.
Does anyone want... No? Okay, show of hands. All those in favour, please raise their hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. All those against... 1, 2, 3, 4. Motion carried by majority.
So it's terrace.
That's terrace.
Right. Can I, now we've done that, Councillor Bell's point, which I thought he gave a very salient speech on this issue. Can we pick that up? And I don't know whether you'd, with your connivance or consent.
I sense the Chief Executive wants to make a comment.
No, I was just making sure that our Committee Secretary was able to get... Yes. Were the votes down, that's all.
I didn't do a division.
No, it was just a show of hands. We just asked for a show of hands here, and we passed by the majority.
Yep.
Okay. Sorry, Councillor Lewis.
That's right. That the ORC investigate whether the private sector might provide stead facilities for the Otago Regional Transport Network. Now, that would then lead... I don't want this conversation to hang, as these sorts of things do, and that then drives us to go and have to do this by a formal motion, Graham. But if we just leave the conversation where it is, we're going to be back here in a year or two arguing about this annual plan, stuff like that.
Okay, Councillor Bell.
For the last 5 years.
Yeah. Hey, Councillor Bell, are you happy to second the motion?
Yeah, I'll second the motion.
You should move it.
You're happy to move it, seconded by Councillor Laws. Any discussion? Councillor Scott.
Yeah, so is that for the Greater Otago region, or is that specifically around the car rail?
No, it's for the region, because if you isolate I mean, what we're looking at is a policy imperative. So the idea of the private sector being encouraged by us to start to provide STED facilities. Now, we may come back and go, yes, they are prepared to engage in this, and there would be a X cost from our point of view, a subsidy or something like that to ensure that happens. But if we leave this conversation hanging, Brian, we're going to make no progress.
No, I understand that. I would have thought the most urgent thing was this concern around the car run.
No.
Could be wrong.
I haven't seen... I drive there almost every day. I've got to be honest with you. I've not noticed a stock effluent problem through the car road gorge.
I don't want us to get back into a debate about the... please. Look, I absolutely concur with the, you know, having something moved by the committee to ask staff to follow up with councillors. Great. Speaking to the motion, Councillor Kempton.
Yeah, indeed. Look, I have no difficulty with the motion at all. I think that, but it is for this council to do it, because it is this is this council's project, which the Regional Transport Committee has said, yeah, that's great, it'll be in our program. So we are the sponsors of it. And so if we're talking about a substitute for a site which has already been set up in the plan, then it's for us, that is the ORC, to spearhead those discussions. That's what I'd say.
That's what that says,
That's fine. Councillor Brown?
I support the motion, but I'll just point out that there probably are a lot of trucking facilities got their own washdown facilities, but they're not steads.
Oh, no.
No,
it's
all
depending on anyone's looking.
Fair enough.
And I think the washdown facilities are probably becoming an issue for them because of environmental considerations.
Correct.
Yep. Yeah, I
support it too, and I think it would be also for our own satisfaction a good exercise in a way too. Just building on that to find out how many, what's the difference out there, isn't it, say between a washdown and what steads there are. So, yes.
I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Against, carry. Thank you very much, everyone.
Can you repeat that motion for me, please?
The ORC investigate whether the private sector might provide stead facilities for the Otago Regional Road Network.
Need to have government legislation.
Thank you very much for your contribution, councillors. Thank you, Chris. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Moving on to the next item is the Lake Hayes restoration, and we welcome Ben Mackey, Dave Hannon, Dave from GHC Consulting, GHS, GH Consulting.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome Ben, and welcome Dave. Nice to see you at the end of the table again. Different table. I'm not going to say a great deal here, because this is a fairly challenging, complex space we're in, and perhaps Ben, do you want to just make some general comment about the options that have been developed up and the process of consultation with the wider community sort of as the next stage, taking these options out for public consultation? So, Ben.
Sure, thank you. So just a quick reminder of where we're sitting in a sort of overall scheme. This is a project looking at intervention options in Lake Hayes to deal with the historic phosphorus in the lake bed that's accumulated over decades. There's separate programs of work with enhanced catchment and other monitoring going on. Rachel Ozan, who's primarily looking after that, sends her apologies. She had to go elsewhere at short notice. Last August, presented a paper and ran a workshop looking at some of these intervention options. And at that time, there was more information requested by the council about how these would work. So the point of today is to hopefully address the resolution that was passed by Council back in August, which is essentially requesting more information. The package we've got today is some work by NIWA expanding on their options and looking at particularly precedent where these options have been used previously and commenting on their effectiveness. Dave Hannon and Mike Goldsmith at GHC have looked at the sort of the practicalities of how these might be implemented, sort of the engineering thinking and what actually doing something would look like and cost. And in a separate bit of work, we've just last week received some modelling work from University of Waikato that's just come in and distributed to councillors. That's also at hand. The hope today is to basically seek endorsement to consult publicly on these range of options to sort of see how the public appetite is for these. So if I can just ask Dave to quickly run through his piece of work, if that's appropriate, and then go from there.
Dave, we're in your hands. Thank you.
Yep. So we identified four different methods. So there's methods and then there's options, and the options are combining various different methods. So the four methods are, I guess it's almost a fifth method, is do no lake intervention method at all, which is simply just monitoring and evaluating. But the methods are really water augmentation, so that's taking water from the Arrowtown Irrigation Scheme and supplementing Mill Creek, which has got cold, dense water, nutrient poor, and that's supposed to help the lower waters of the lake. De-stratification, which is simply a layman's terms, is running a bubbler through the centre of the lake to run an air curtain to create cyclic currents within the lake, and that's supposed to prevent the lake from stratifying, which prevents the lake waters in the deeper parts of the lake from becoming anoxic and releasing the P from solid P to dissolved reactive P, which is a stimulant for algae. Hypolimnic withdrawal, which is a very technical word. So essentially that's putting a pipe into the lower waters of the lake, the anoxic water, the deep waters, and running it out through Mill Creek. That's quite an interesting option because it's one of the few options that or few methods that actually actively removes P from the lake. Sediment capping is a chemical fixing of the P in the lake, the dissolved P, and it turns it to solid P and stops it from being released. So from those methods, there are a number of different options which are highlighted in, I guess we've tried to summarise that in page 30 and 31 of the report, in quite a colourful, table looking at how they're presented. So option one is monitoring and evaluation only. So I've already mentioned that. It provides information and supports other implementation options. Augmenting water from the Arrow River, so that's it's a low-cost option, as we've talked about, little risk of water availability during the summer, so it's a risk that we must consider. There's not a lot of precedence around for doing this, but we feel that it's quite compatible with other options, so that's a very good thing. The de-stratification air curtain option, which I've already discussed how it works, it's relatively high cost. It will keep the lake de-stratified. There are some risks with it, probably some unforeseen ecological risks. That is a possibility by choosing that option. It is used commonly in other lakes around the countryside, including in particularly New Zealand in the North Island for dams and reservoirs. There's de-stratification augmentation, so you can combine the two, so that's to assist in flushing out the P and to stop the lake from stratifying. Option five is sediment capping, which I've already discussed. Then there's sediment capping and augmentation. So you'd sediment cap and then you continue to flush and keep the lake waters oxygenated and clean. So that's a positive thing. Then there's hypolimic withdrawal, which I've already mentioned, how that works. And then there's hypolimic withdrawal and the augmentation. So removing P actively as well as putting cleaner water into the lake. I guess we've put it together into a reasonably easy format to understand the costs, the operating costs, and the speed of recovery. We've outlined the key risks and the made some comments on there in this table. There's further detailed tables in the other parts of the report. I guess it's really over to you if you have any questions.
Thank you very much, Ben and Dave. And I suppose just reminding us all that we're receiving the report and we're essentially, the consultation process to consider the various options, costs, etc. So just with that in mind, Councillor Laws, then Councillor Scott, then Councillor Hope.
First of all, I just want to compliment you on the quality of this report. I think it's outstanding and one of the best reports that I have seen come to this council in the time that I've been here. And I'd like to think that this report is going to be shared widely, not just with the Lake Hayes community, but with other communities in Central Otago region, because I think the science here has so much benefit. And I'm particularly thinking also of some of our education institutions that would benefit from having this report, and indeed you guys talk to it. It is brilliant. Love also how you've made the option so accessible. And I think the consultation document based upon this will be outstanding. So congratulations.
Thank you.
All I want to do is move it. I think that the community is more than ready to move and to progress. I think a little bit more around, I had thought a little bit more around mixing them up, the mix of options. But then I see in the balance of your report that is covered, and I guess that will be a part of that as well. But no, seriously, well done. I have great pleasure in moving the motion.
Moved by Councillor Laws, seconded by Councillor Lawton. We go to Councillor Scott and Councillor Hope.
Yeah, no, great. We've been waiting for this report for a long time, actually, and it's great to have it here. My question is we've come up with a number of methods, options, this type of thing, and now we're going to consultation. And what are we really expecting out of that consultation? I'm assuming at the end of the day it'll be this council that will ultimately make the decision, yeah, in terms of
option,
which option and what the funding actually is. I'm also wondering where the management of nutrients into Lake Hayes, where that sort of fits, and whether that should actually be part of the consultation as well long term. And I hear talk of potentially one or two wetlands, this type of thing, and why isn't that not inherent part of this whole consultation, big picture type of thing? So that my question, if it was me, I'd love to maybe try one or two of the options and see how they actually perform, maybe progress the three of them and turn one off for a while and see how the other one goes. And I'll be just like, what are we expecting out of this consultation in terms of, are we going to say, oh, well, that's interesting, but this is what we're going to do from a technical, or are we saying, hey, you guys are going to end up paying for it, therefore you tell us what you want?
Well, I'll have a crack at this first and then I'll hand over to Dr. Palmer, but my understanding is that we need to settle on an option for annual plan purposes, ultimately after we've consulted.
Option, singular.
We would need to also, as part of that, consider the costs, the risks, etc. In that, during that process, like we do with any additional funding or any additional projects that are added into the annual plan process. So, and the other comment I'd make, Ben did mention, was it Rachel who's doing the work around the catchment, and that's obviously ongoing, but Councillor Scott, you wanted to know why that some more emphasis on that focus, because I take it that...
No, repeat your question. I'm actually really happy with the report. I'm just saying, do we also need, in the consultation, need to talk about the opportunities to manage the nutrients and wetlands, and that should that be part of the sort of the package? And I also make a final comment, you know, like we talked about the leaf, $12 million, and we're going boom, boom, boom. I didn't actually think that the money that's actually talked about here is particularly high. You know, this is a wonderful resource. And I say it again, maybe we the water augmentation, the destratification, the hypolimnetic withdrawal, maybe we should be doing all three of them and learning how they balance, how they work together, and which is actually getting the best bang for the bucks.
Okay, I'll ask Dr. Palmer, in terms of the scope of the consultation or the conversation we have with the community, how widely scoped that is. Dr. Palmer.
Yep. So certainly with the consultation will be a very comprehensive information package, not just on these options, but on the other things that council is doing in respect of catchment monitoring and that kind of thing. So we see it as not just consulting on these methods, but using it to inform the wider community of those things that council is doing. It's not just consultation, it's information provision. So that will certainly be a part of the package.
Yeah.
The second thing is Dr. Mackey, in his report at paragraph 30, page 29 of your agenda, is talked about what we wish to get back from the public. And what we're really after is a sense of comfort or discomfort with any of the options which have different risk profiles. Some things are, you know, more likely to be effective than others. Some things might have a smallish capital cost, but you're making a commitment to an ongoing operational cost in perpetuity.
Yeah.
So we're just wanting to test the community. Are there anything you'd want to drop out from further consideration? Is there any strong opinion about those trade-offs between risk and cost?
Yeah.
Some of them have some quite significant visual impact, and so they might be fatal for further consideration. So those are the kind of things that will be teased out in the consultation.
Yeah. But will you come back with a recommendation to this council?
Yes, we will.
Like, for example, the you know, that effluent disposal thing, you know, like it was a number of options and we sort of picked out from them, but there was no specific, you know, recommendation. Let's not go there. But you're going to come back with a technical recommendation after consultation.
I expect we'll come back with some recommendations about a subset or one or maybe none for further consideration. We'll be quite specific about the options.
Okay.
Councillor Hope.
Okay. You too. Good morning, Dave. I just want to ask you a quick question about number two, the air curtain. You talk about it being relatively high cost, used commonly in the North Island, but there is the unforeseen risk. Are you able to just give us a little bit more information about what the unforeseen risks could be?
You are adding oxygen into an environment which is not that oxygenated, which may cause... I'll just say may and possibly, because it's hard to tell, because every lake is different.
Yeah.
So may cause some unforeseen bug or algae or something like that to become stimulated, you know. So we're not sure exactly what that will do. And there is that risk involved. It could be that nothing happens. So it just is a little bit of, butt covering. Just to make sure that you are aware that there is some risk associated with implementing that.
You could stir up something. And
you could. Okay. Well, not so much stir up, but you're introducing oxygen into an unoxygenated environment. You know, how do the currents actually behave once it's activated? Are they going to capture the entire lake system? That they should, and they might well do, but... there could be some unforeseen outcomes, even if it is the chosen one. I would add that there's possibly another one which is listed in the discussion document, which possibly might have the, picking up on your point, Mr. Scott, is the adding alum to the lake, the sedimentation option, combined with the hypolimnetic withdrawal. So that locks up what's there and it removes anything that might come in. So that's not an option at the moment, but it's been discussed in the discussion part of the document, and through the consultation process that might be the best one. It may be that adding alum might not be, that compatible with the public. They might see that as being a fatal flaw. So, yeah.
Thank you for that explanation. Councillor Lawton, then Councillor Deakin, then Councillor Kempton.
Thank you. I'm very happy to second this movement of this proposal, and that it's incredibly important that we go out for consultation on this. It's been an issue dear to the hearts of many, not just those who live around it, but across the region. And this is a fantastic paper. Well done, everyone. I think highlighting the need to have the broader story around what's happened here, a bit of the history. I'm also very aware that through the previous annual plan, we agreed to spend more than $100,000 on the first part of the augmentation process. So we've actually already got infrastructure sitting in the ground, waiting. As I understand it, the consultation will come back, and then as of next financial year, we'll actually then go into more detailed discussion and design. So we've got a bit of time that we need to talk to the community about why it's taking so long, because there is some unrest in the community. So this is a really great opportunity for education. I think we also need to be careful that ourselves and our various consultants don't know it all, and in fact there might be other things that come out through this process that are going to be incredibly valuable to add to our information and knowledge. So really happy to take the time to do this properly, because we're changing the entire hydrological system in terms of the catchment and the outcomes of that, both in terms of remediation but also how we affect the ongoing impact on the lake, which is a conversation that also needs to be had with the Queensland Lakes District Council and all those landowners that it will affect. So it is a good opportunity for the entire community to take part. So thank you everyone who put time and effort into making this paper happen.
Councillor Deakin.
Three quick points. First, I'd have thought that one of the unforeseen negative consequences of destratification would be you've got at least one diesel motor sitting beside the lake going thumpity thump thump for X number of hours per day and night. Am I right in saying that?
It would probably be an electric motor, and it would be a compressor, and it would be in a purpose-built soundproof shed. I mean, we're well aware that compressors make noise, and we are very aware that there's quite a few multi-million dollar homes around the where the compressor site might be. So we've carefully considered where that should be located, and we've carefully that building would be rigorously designed so that the noise effects would be virtually eliminated, I hope.
That's comforting. I have no worries about the value of the property. It's about the quality of the water that I'm concerned about. Second point was the consultation process. I'm sure we'll do it well because we have excellent staff who manage the stuff really well. But I want to know that at those sessions where the public can come in and talk about the options, that there will be on hand sufficient expertise to answer their questions. Our comms staff won't have that expertise. Who will be there to say, this is what hypolimnic withdrawal actually means and what will it do for you as a resident sitting beside the lake?
Dr. Palmer.
Yes, we'll have technical staff there as well as the experts on the methods. We'll ensure that we have the right people there to answer what will be very technical questions.
What do those right people look like?
I would expect Ms. Ozan, for example, Mr. Hannon and that, Dr. Mackey.
Dr. Schellenberg, perhaps?
Yes, we would get others that would assist us too.
Okay, that's my second one. The third one has gone completely out of my head temporarily. I presume that when the word digital is used to describe the consultation, that means that all the community opinions will be harvested by way of the Your Say site on our website. Is that right?
A question for
Lisa?
My real number three was actually this one. To follow up my comments earlier about Central Otago District Council and how we must work more and more hand in hand with our GLA partners, presumably we will be hand in hand with QLDC during this consultation phase. We will invite them to be at our community drop-in meetings as well, at least a councillor or two, or a staff representative or two, who can also be on hand to add their important local bit into the consultation.
That be the case, Dr.
I will take those comments on board and incorporate it into our office.
I hope we can do that.
That's fine.
Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Kempton. Oh, sorry, Chief Executive. Do you want me to raise it now? Chief Executive has just raised the issue about upstream, the wetland. I assume you're referring to the development that...
I thought I could just mention it quickly. So I've been engaging with Mike Hamp from Friends of Lake Hayes, and I think the consultation's really timely, and the other piece that's happening at the moment is also... I think a growing interest in looking at actually one of the things that we need to do is make sure that some of these nutrients aren't getting into the lake in the first place. And so there is a scoping study on the table for wetland developments, and they have approached us about, and QLDC about perhaps partnering and supporting a scoping study on that. So... those conversations continue, but I just thought it was an important part of the picture because this is really important, what's before you, but also, you know, that sort of longevity of making sure that the problem of nutrients coming into the lake doesn't continue.
Excellent. Thank you. Councillor Kempton.
Yeah, just very briefly, I agree with other people's approval of what's been given to us today, but there's one thing that occurs to me, and if I've missed it in the report, forgive me, because there was a bit to be going on with, and it is the question of the impact of hypolimnetic, I wanted to say that, basically taking water out of the bottom, maybe we're putting water in the top as well as an augmentation, the impact of that on the receiving waters, and, of course, the river system broadly, what we're actually... Because there are two kind of propositions here. One of them is to keep it in a lake and somehow or other keep it quiet, you know, just keep it under control. And the other one is to take it out and put it in other natural waterways. So we're taking phosphorus out of the lake, and we're dilution is the solution, which we know that in terms of our water plan principles, that's not great. Now, is there, what I really wanted to know, and I didn't pick it up out of the report, and if it's there, I apologise, is if there is a means by which, simple means by which we can actually eliminate the phosphorus after it's come out of the lake so that it doesn't go into the rest of the waterway system.
Who's going
to?
Ben?
One of the issues with taking that deep water is that in the late summer it gets anoxic and is basically not very pleasant. It's got the sort of potential sulfury smell, the high nutrient load. That can be mitigated when you discharge it with aeration or oxygenation through various mechanisms, such as running it through riffles and things.
Yes, so there is a potentially a secondary treatment process to be thought about as well. That's what we need to know.
I would say it's more a natural process. So the key is oxygenation. So you've got to, from what I understand from the stuff from the scientists that have put together this the technical work behind the report that we've done. So the idea, you've got to really, following up on what Ben said, you've got to agitate the water, oxygenate the water. Remember that there's surface water coming off the lake as well, and we're just combining a small amount with a large amount.
Yep.
So there is the oxygenated surface water and this other, I guess, not so nicer water. For the vast majority of the year, though, it is lake water. It is the same, because the lake is it's only in the summertime when the lake stratifies that this becomes an issue.
It's just that I don't particularly want the the question of water that's being discharged, the quality of that, to be ignored in this process.
Correct. I totally agree with what you're saying.
Thank you. Councillor Robertson.
Yeah, mine was kind of just a similar technical question. Yeah, really good to have this report, so good to have extra information. I'm glad we asked for it. I remember at the time as well adding in hyperlimnetic withdrawal, which we hadn't thought of or had discounted. But in light of that, I just want to check, because we did have a list of things that our group had come up with and our council had come up with, and at the last second added another. But I want to check that we did assess all options that would be likely to be beneficial, so that we've covered everything. I know there's little ones, but any major ones that we've missed?
I would say absolutely yes to that. We, when formulating the report, we consulted with Max Gibbs, Dr. Max Gibbs. We had it reviewed by Ben, Dr. Ben Mackey as well. We looked at Mark Schellenberg's reports early on in the piece, and I believe we've comprehensively covered what we think will work. I mean, there are other things that might not work very well, but what we think will work most effectively is listed here.
I can add to that, if there's a couple that were basically discounted. One was trying to dredge sediments. Another one was a food web manipulation, but I think the advice is the lake's too deep for that to work. And there's a new technology on the scene with nano bubbles, but I don't think it's advanced enough to be implemented at scale.
Thank you.
Councillor Brown.
I just wanted an understanding of how robust the costs are with around these options, because I'm sure at the consultation everyone's going to ask how much it's going to cost us. And it seems to me as though it's not going to be handled in this year's annual plan. It'll probably be the following year, so there's going to be quite a time delay before we get around to actually having something in place, if that's what we deem to do.
So, question for you, Dave, with regards to how robust those numbers are associated with each option?
They are estimates at the moment. We think they're reasonably robust estimates. There's a detailed design. Once an option is selected, a detailed design process is required, and therefore proper costings can be undertaken. So there was a degree of, trying to estimate or what a solution might look like. We believe they have an air of conservatism in them. But we have it is Queenstown, and things are more expensive to put install in that area. So I believe they're reasonably robust.
Thank
from
you.
The information that we had.
Okay, before I put the two recommendations, I'll just check with Councillor Lawton. You didn't have anything else to raise? Okay, cool. Been moved and seconded, moved by Councillor Laws, seconded by Councillor Lawton. I'll put a recommendation 1 and 2. All those in favour, please say aye.
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 Chair. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Now, I know we've essentially eaten the majority of our, majority of our smoko time. So what I'm going to suggest before you go to the room, Councillor Scott, is that we'll keep going until a minute before 11. We'll probably need to open regulatory and then adjourn, and then we can have smoko and continue with technical. Was that okay with Mr. Donnelly? Righto, we'll continue on. Moving on to this is Dr. Palmer's report. For noting, we take it as read. I'm happy to move that we receive the report. Councillor Neal, everyone comfortable? No questions? If not, I will. Councillor Woodhead.
I just want to note page 33, the map, the precipitation index, UQI map, and you can see the light brown and the red spots growing around southwest Otago. That has exacerbated significantly since the 25th of February. Just for your information, it is very dry in one of our most productive parts and highly stocked parts of our region.
Thank you, Councillor Woodhead. If there are no further comments, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Moving on to item 11.2, active faults in the Queenstown Lakes and Central Otago districts. We've got Dr. Mackey with us again, and also Dave Barrell from GNS Science. Welcome, Dave. And of course, John Luke.
Major changes.
Welcome, gentlemen. Once again, it's in a complex, challenging area, but clearly we're just here to receive the report. But it does highlight some new information, and you've highlighted that under the executive summary, Ben, the and perhaps Dr. Palmer, the reference to the key findings in those three faults where you've emphasised that this is a new information, so to speak. Ben, is there anything you want to comment on, John Luke or Dave? Feel free.
I suppose generally this is part of a region-wide review we're doing, broken down into separate districts just for manageability. It's the intention is to basically pull together all known information about active faults and folds, and because the existing information spread over many sources from past decades, so it's an up-to-date assessment of our knowledge of the faults in Central Otago and Queenstown Lakes. And
okay, Dave, your any comment?
No, I think the value of what we've been able to provide for in this report has been very much a bringing together of knowledge which has been talked about amongst geologists and things that have been in people's heads. But I mean, there's been a lot of the basis for how active faults have been interpreted and looked at, and I think that this has been a good opportunity to sort of basically table the state of knowledge and at least establish a consistent knowledge base for that part of the region.
Thank you. And John Luke, this essentially adds to the data that we hold, and from a natural hazards point of view, that just helps to perhaps provide a little bit more clarity in this space.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, when we're planning to provide this information to the public through the report, but also the natural hazard database on the web.
Thank you. Any questions, queries, councillors? Councillor Hope,
all right,
and then Councillor Lawton.
Thank you, through the chair. It's just a little query about there's a map in there showing around motor tap places like that where you've got some faults and bits and pieces. Say if I was probably all high country stations, but just for example, if there was a property around there and I wanted to purchase that, would I find that, if it's gazillions, but would I find that on an ORC, would it come up on a property file or something like that? How aware would I be as a member of a public wanting to find out some information to, in regards to something residential? Say if you wanted to purchase a place and you know you didn't live here, you come from overseas, but you want to know. Is that readily available?
Yes, the plan is to have the updated maps on the Natural Hazard Database, so that's a website where anyone can log
have
in or
yep.
connect,
yep.
put a property address,
yes.
and
yep.
all relevant natural hazards will be either displayed as a map,
yes.
or they will have access to the relevant reports. And we always also open to those kind of inquiries coming. We receive quite a number of public inquiries of the potential people wanting to buy properties, so we
yes.
direct them to the database,
right.
and also if they need more information, we're here to explain and respond to their request if they've got specific clarification they need on the technical part of the work.
There is that, but there's nothing actually tagged to the property, is there? That's the difference. You know what I mean? You've got to ask for it as opposed to you would put something just highlighting perhaps some work going on.
There is also the land information memorandum that basically the district or the city council manages.
Yes.
And we make sure that the information, and usually we make sure that the natural hazard information that we have and updates are provided to the district so they can update their LIM processes and have that information on those documents.
Before I go to Councillor, I will adjourn the technical committee. Councillor Scott, would you just like to open the regulatory committee and then adjourn the committee? Then we'll go to Councillor Lawton, then we'll adjourn, maybe we can knock this item off, then we'll have Smoko, is it, everyone happy with that?
Yeah, that's fine. Just as a matter of interest here, do we need to do this type of process, or is it... Do we?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I will, from this position here, I'll open the regulatory committee and adjourn the regulatory committee.
Thank you very much,
invite you to carry
Councillor
on,
Scott.
Councillor.
We will reconvene the technical...
Okay.
Councillor Lawton.
Great question, Councillor Hope. That was a... Thank you.
It hasn't been moved. Moved before we received the report. I'll move by Councillor Lawton. Second. I'll second. No further comment. All good. Councillor Woodhead.
I just think there's an opportunity here in our communications to inform the public a little bit, and maybe we can wrap it in with an emergency management Otago type community plan meeting or update. And pull it all together at some point, brief the district council, make sure they're technically, and then take the opportunity. So it doesn't need a recommendation, just I think the comms staff or technical staff know that, and we can...
Comms are present and they heard the comments.
Yep. That's it.
Yes, there is.
Yep. Already done.
That's the comment.
I'll put the motion that we receive this report. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. We'll stand adjourned and reconvene 15 minutes, okay?
Yep.
Quarter past 11. Thank you.
Good work, Ben.
Thank you.
You're off for your bloody nuts.
Oh, sure. No, we just kept them on the roof.